Welcome, this is James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. It's the 11th of July, 2013 here in Japan, the 10th back in the United States, where today I'm joined on the line by Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton of TruthStreamMedia.com. I'm sure these guys will need no introduction to most of my listeners. So Aaron, Melissa, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, James.
Thank you, James.
Excellent. Well, thanks for taking the time to do this, and thanks for putting together TruthStreamMedia.com. And perhaps there are new people learning about this website every single day, as I must confess, I myself only learned about it very recently, although it's been up for a few months now, as I understand. Tell us about TruthStream Media, how it came together, and what you guys are covering.
Well, people know us from working at InfoWars, but we decided to branch out and work together and start our own website and
do our own thing. And there wasn't an official announcement, we don't think, from our last place of employment, so that would probably be why some people still don't realize we aren't there. But yeah, we decided we wanted to work together. So,
but we're just trying to pursue the same great questions that we always have been looking into, and the rabbit hole always goes deeper, as I'm sure you figured out yourself.
Unfortunately so. Well, I know you guys have done excellent work in the past, and it's definitely translating through into the new website. So tell us about some of the topics that you guys are focusing on.
Well, you know, there's the big conspiracy, the political stuff, but sometimes more and more, I just see that whole system as being totally co-opted, and our voices, at least here in America, probably in most of the countries, it's borderline irrelevant. I mean, I want to continue to focus on that stuff, but I want to work on stuff where I can try to take back my own life. And to me, food freedom really comes up as one of the main topics, to where we need to at least think about self-sufficiency. I would love to be growing my own garden, but we're not doing that yet. But
we plan to start working on that. That's actually a project in the pipeline. So definitely. And that and research. We do a lot of research to try and show people this is not anything new. The things that you're seeing now seem new and horrible because they're new to you. But research shows that history just continues to repeat itself over and over and over. And so we do a lot of that as well.
Absolutely, and you're doing a great job of it, talking about the GMO agenda specifically and all of the things related to that. As I'm sure my listeners know, this is something that I think is not only extremely important, but as you say, something that we can, at this point, still take into our own hands to a large extent, deciding what goes in our own bodies. But of course, that freedom itself is in jeopardy in a lot of ways, so I think we have to exercise it while we have it. On that note, something that a lot of people have gotten behind in the last year or two is the idea of labeling laws there in the United States. Of course, the U.S. having famously no labeling laws whatsoever for GMO products, which is problematic, at least, for people who want to understand what's going into their own bodies and what they're choosing to purchase. But so there have been movements like Prop 37 in California trying to get labeling laws on the books, but this has definitely been a problem. There's been a lot of resistance. So there has been this paradigm set up of the activists working towards getting labeling laws and the biotech companies arguing against it, but that may in fact be a false paradigm in some ways. And you guys just put out a very, very important video called Why a Federal GMO Labeling Law could be worthless. And this is an extremely important video. I will put the link in the show notes so people can watch it for themselves. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your research and what you guys have found about this, what's going on behind the scenes regarding federal labeling laws?
Well, just as a general setup, I would say, first of all, labeling is a great common sense idea, but it has its own deceptions. But in many ways, I think the system is interested in us having the labeling discussion so we're not openly having the just get rid of GMO foods, or why can't we know what they're made of? Why isn't there real testing? Why isn't it on the burden of the companies to show that it's safe before it ever enters our food chain? But that hasn't happened. But given that it's already a reality, obviously we need to push for labeling laws as well. But that's not the end goal. And there is an end game on the other side. It has a lot to do with the Rockefeller's food agenda, stuff going on at the global and international level. And we're following that stuff as well, but on the federal labeling issue.
Well, it's just right now we've got 25 states here that are in some process of trying to pass something after California's failed. And if you look at the finances on that, it failed all within basically the last month. Everyone was for it right up until the last month, and then all of a sudden the numbers completely shifted when tons of money was being poured into the opposition of that labeling law by these companies. And so they were putting out all kinds of propaganda. One of those things that they put out, I have over here, it was very interesting, had to do with the fact that It's by forcing food products to be repackaged or remade with higher priced ingredients, Prop 37 would cost the average California family up to $400 a year in higher grocery costs. It was a whole economic analysis. They were telling California families, if you say yes to this labeling law, it's going to cost you guys $400 extra at the grocery store every year. But they were spending $50 million to defeat it. Where is the logic in that? There isn't any. And so now you've got 25 other states trying to pass things. And why would they suddenly fold? The only thing we could think of is they're trying to preempt in the back door.
And now Connecticut has become the first state to pass a GMO labeling law, but it itself will not have teeth unless other states join on the bandwagon. But simultaneously, the bigger players have been pushing for this federal GMO labeling law. It's very weird politics, but you've got the biggest organic companies in the U.S., Stonyfield Farms, Organic Valley, Whole Foods. They've all been meeting with the USDA and across the table from Monsanto and other biotech people, and they've been coming to agreements. They've been having bonding experiences and, you know, eating yogurt, organic socials. Yogurt together or whatever. And so they're ready to move towards compromise, and it's really dangerous. They've already done a big compromise on GE alfalfa, which people don't eat in mass, but livestock do that people eat.
And then you eat the livestock.
And that's been a big deal. And they ironed out so-called coexistence, which is really just a recipe for contamination and tainting. And now it's moving even further. You've got Gary Hirschberg, the CEO of Stonyfield Farms, who's been at all these meetings. And since the failure of Prop 37, he's been meeting with Walmart, with PepsiCo, Frito-Lay, ConAgra. Pretty much all the big food companies have all been getting together in a room and saying, look, it was really expensive on Prop 37. We don't want to do it state by state. So why don't we iron out something federally, and maybe it'll kind of trump everything. We have this legal concept of preemption, and if we beat them to the punch, that might be enough to do it.
Yeah, but then you see other countries where this kind of thing has happened, and they allow up to 5% of GMO in the food, or they'll base it on how much GMO is in the final food product and not how much GMO went into processing the food based on different scientific tests. So it becomes really technical, and it just almost just becomes something they tell you so you'll feel better while you still eat the GMO.
In fact, that was something that I pointed out about the Prop 37 draft text, was that it did have that type of exception talking about a certain percentage of GMO that was allowable. And the people that I talked to who were advocating Prop 37 didn't seem to have a problem with that. But I think you're exactly right. This is the back door through which they can sneak this in. And as you say, it's important to understand this has already been done in other countries. In fact, I often like to talk about how Japan is GMO-free, but as you point out, in fact, the GMO labeling laws here in Japan have those types of exceptions as well.
And my understanding is also that through the global agreements, through the kind of bilateral agreements with Canada and the U.S., through the World Trade Organization agreements, the Asian Pacific agreements, there's major exporting going on, obviously. And I guess at this point in time, Europe is the biggest resistance to total GMO takeover because they refuse the imports. But now they're ironing out the details of that as well to agree upon a low-level presence, which is a similar kind of deal of where a certain percentage of GMO wouldn't be counted as GMO, and they can go about doing their global exports as always in these gigantic trade blocks.
Well, that's exactly right. And of course, now we have the TPP coming along, threatening to basically standardize the entire Asia-Pacific region. So it is definitely something that will be hardwired in through international treaties in the very near future. And it's inconceivable to me how any processed food product coming from the United States could not contain some GMO product, just given the sheer extent of how much of GMO foods have been put into the food supply at this point.
I mean, if you look at the data in our country, it goes up every single year. We are at 90% now of corn in this country is genetically modified. So you're basically, yeah, it is hard to conceive of it.
Well, there's been a lot of reasons, obviously, to try to rein in GMO. But if nothing else will be a wake-up call, how about the inadvertent contamination of the GM wheat that just happened in the Oregon fields? And the whole backstory to that we've been following as well, where Monsanto tried to develop this GE wheat over a period of, what, six, 7 years?
8 years, I think.
2005 to about...
No, it was like in 98, 99 to 2005.
Yeah, excuse me. They finished...
It was a long time, basically. It was a while, and they finished it.
Well, they couldn't get the GE weed through because nobody Canada wouldn't it. Accept it. Europe didn't want it. Nobody Basically, nobody take. Wanted it. What happened at that point? Our government here in the United States, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, stored Monsanto's genetically modified wheat seeds in their big storage vaults.
1,000 varieties they stored.
Until the point, really, when the contamination began. So our government is totally backing these biotech companies. It's really nasty stuff.
Well, that, and then also we've been doing research into our aid programs, our foreign aid programs that are through our government, such as USAID, and how they basically subsidize sending genetically modified food aid to all of these developing countries, too. So,
and some of the developing countries actually refuse it because they don't want the GM.
They do. Actually, we're working on a mini documentary right now about farming with a pH where they actually grow pharmaceuticals on the backs of genetically modified crops. And we found out that after the Iraq invasion, they had a program called INMA through USAID where they went over and basically instituted all kinds of our new modern agriculture practices there in Iraq. So we had lots of reasons to go there, didn't we?
And I know a lot of it is preaching to the choir with you, James, and your audience, but somehow we've got to get the general population to wake up to the fact that it matters that they're changing our food. Even before we get to the genetically modified level, just cutely playing around with the formulations of food is upsetting people's intestines. It's disrupting their digestion. It's causing spikes and allergens and all kinds of health issues.
Food allergies are off.
And we're all going to be paying the piper. You know, if you don't have it yourself in this country and increasingly around the world, it's going to be a loved one. And so it's really going to hit home for everyone.
It really is. And as you say, it's only exploding all the time. And one has to, there's no other way than to correlate the rise in the type of processed food crap that's being fed to people and the rise in these types of just catastrophic health effects. The funny part about the GE wheat scandal, funny, not ha-ha funny, but funny,
not
is
provoking.
That now Monsanto is claiming it's a false flag. You know, they've been set up. They're being sabotaged. So,
well, the creepy thing...
Monsanto are the conspiracy theorists, but either way, it's a disturbing story for a lot of reasons. This brings us back to that fundamental point that we started at today, which is that labeling can't, I think, be the end goal of what we're trying to achieve here, because at the end of the day, these companies are going to sneak this in the back door one way or another if we allow them to. So I think the question is, what can actually conceivably be done about this? And I think this has to come back to that idea of, at the very least, we still control what we eat and what we don't eat, and we still vote with our dollars every single day as to what products we're going to put in our mouth and what we're not. So is there a way that people can actually source this for themselves without waiting for some sort of federal labeling law?
He's
James,
all excited.
I don't want to be nostalgic here, but in so many ways with world order, I'd love to go back to before World War II, or in this case, at least during World War II. We've got to talk about Victory Garden as a solution. And I think people en masse need to start growing whatever they can for vegetable gardens, raising their own food. And we've got to revitalize local in every sense, not the global local that they've been pushing through Agenda 21. And the rhetoric's going to remain tricky because these people have been shaping these systems for hundreds of years. And you heard Kissinger in the 70s. He wants nothing short of food as a weapon. They want to control the entire food supply so that populations remain compliant to this global world order. Well, we can basically defeat that as best as we're going to be able to by decentralizing that, taking back any part of your production. If you're not going to do a garden, figure out who your neighbors are down the road, start a relationship. But, you know, there's a million ways you can do it. We started just growing sprouts in our kitchen because we're not ready for a full-on vegetable garden.
Yeah. You can do that in like 2 or 3 days with just water and sprouts on your countertop, and then you have food. We were also going to start making a lot of videos, and we've been doing this a little bit, just to show how with all these convenience food, everybody thinks that they're saving so much time. But actually, if you go back to just making it yourself, you not only save time but money, and you don't have a bunch of ingredients in your food that you can't even pronounce.
Exactly right. And as I've said before, if you are what you eat, then do you want to be a bunch of ingredients that you can't even pronounce? Exactly right. So this brings it back to what people can actually do for themselves. And I think you're right. They have to source locally. They have to know and be able to look in the eye the people that are growing their food and understand what it is they're putting in their plates. I think that's all extremely important. But even if people want to purchase products that are made by people in a factory somewhere that they don't know, if they want to go that route, there are things like the non-GMO project that are basically labeling without waiting for government regulation to do so. I know a lot of people have their own particular problems with the non-GMO project, but as an idea, as a citizen-led initiative, is there something that we can use this technology that we have now to try to crowdsource something like a GMO?
Yeah, and I don't remember the names of the apps, but there's apps you can do to check and see if something either is non-GMO or if they've funded a cause that you disagree with, that kind of things you can do on smartphones. Not that I would push people towards smartphones, but yeah, I'm still shopping in the grocery store, and I look for non-GMO project stuff, and I hope it lives up to the standard that everybody's claiming. And at the same time, I would definitely want to raise questions about how do we stop subsidizing big agri? How do we stop subsidizing genetically modified foods, particularly through the U.S. government, because that remains the major global engine. And there's just, I think, more than $100 billion that goes through the USDA's hands, and really, for practical purposes, right into the hands of biotech and big ag or big factory farms. Everything they're doing through those government subsidies, it's destroying local farming and any kind of decentralized stuff going on.
And then we have to trust somehow, on the flip side of that coin, the label organic that's coming from that same USDA that has Tom Vilsack running it, who was once biotech governor of the year. I mean, this guy did everything but backflip. Maybe he did backflip literally for GMO. I mean, he was all about it and still is. So, I mean, we still have to somehow trust that. It's very hard. I actually get sometimes upset when I grocery shop now. I actually literally get frustrated reading labels and thinking about what I'm trying to feed my kids.
I wouldn't blame you. It's absolutely disgusting. And as you guys have pointed out in some of your research, USDA actually co-holds patents with some of the big biotechs.
Isn't that incredible?
Oh, man, yes. Almost everyone you can think of, they do.
Our government's literally in business with that stuff. And when we go back to the pharmaceutical crops, every time they get into a contamination scandal, every time something goes wrong, they cover for them publicly, or they extend them a tax-free loan, or they take out a new patent with them and start the project all over under a new company name.
Start a new company name. That's what we've found. And they give them a small business loan to start it back up, and they just do the same thing, business as usual.
Absolutely disgusting, and it just goes to show how completely and utterly corrupted this system is. And again, I don't think the solution is going to come from within that system. It can only come from the people going around that system altogether. So bringing us back then to the solutions and what people can do in their own kitchen to control what's going in their own bodies, I guess a lot of people are understand this intuitively, understand that this is really the solution, but are put off by the fact that this is such a huge change to implement. It's so much easier just to go to the supermarket and just pick up whatever kind of processed crap they're selling than it is to actually change your habits. What can you say about that? And for people who are discouraged by this, do they have to do it 100% all overnight, or can they do this in stages?
We're doing it in stages.
I think it all starts with a step, and you know, it's going to lead to something bigger. When you're picking out foods, if you get them locally, as local as your backyard, or if you get it from a supermarket, look for stuff that's going to help you build immunity. Look for stuff that's not going to clog down your digestion. Focus on clean sources of protein before you go to the carbs and the various wheats and pastas, because really that whole grain department.
I think it's the majority of the middle of the supermarket, isn't it? That's basically all processed and filled with crap.
Sure.
So start on the outsides. That's another good hint.
And you heard Napoleon talk about an army moves on its stomach. Well, a population also moves on its stomach, and those in power have been using food as a weapon for a long time. Feeding us stuff like grains, they found, basically works as an opiate. It keeps people complacent, and it's, you know,
it makes you hungrier.
It becomes literally opiate of the masses. You also eat more, but
it works as an excitotoxin in your brain.
The type of foods you eat are going to determine, to a certain extent anyway, the kind of behavior you're going to have and the kind of attitudes you're going to have towards the social order.
Yeah. Well, and the thing about organic, too, people say it's too expensive. I can't afford it. I mean, it is all we really have right now. And so I would say afford organic now as much as you possibly can, or try to afford the medical bills that you're going to have to pay later when you get really ill from all of this stuff. I mean, how it starts is it hurts people in their gut. It disrupts their gut flora. It causes their intestinal lining to break down. And when you have that going on, that's where nutrients first enter your body. And when nutrients can't enter your body properly in that area, then you have 200 to 300 different symptoms that can happen to you in a range of diseases. And I think that's why in a big majority we're seeing, like, off the charts here in America for sure, just everything is going up. Everything, every kind of disease, disorder, Alzheimer's, cancer, I mean, you name it.
And bottom line, you want to stay out of the hospital at all costs. Try not to go there. And if you have to go there, get out literally minutes, seconds, as quick as you can.
Allopathic medicine is not trying to heal you. It is trying to mask your symptoms so that you will come back for more later. I mean, that's really all it can do.
But money, of course, as we know, is an exchange. And it's, what are you going to ultimately put into your body? If you're going to use money to buy entertainment and television, it's not really going to net you anything. It's probably going to harm you. You've got to be putting some things that are building health and longevity into your body, even if you don't want to live, at least so you can think straight.
Nice.
You know, it's some world it's they've got built. But
true. Well, an ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure, and that's absolutely the case for food as well. All right. Well, we've touched, I think, on all the bases. Anything else that you'd like to bring to the listeners' attention regarding GMOs and what people can do about this?
It's an incredible battle. I would cite again the words of founding father Dr. Benjamin Rush. Well, I don't have his words exactly, but he said to the effect that if we don't institute the liberty of food and medicine to put it into our bodies, that individuals can choose and that it's an individual right, if we don't recognize that, it's going to become a food and medicine tyranny. And because we didn't institute that in the U.S., we've definitely seen that on the rise. And there is a medical food industrial complex. Pharmaceuticals are very much in bed with all of that. And they want your soul. They want your body. They want your money. And I personally would disengage at all costs if possible.
That, and I think that people don't seem to realize that in the time of the Great Depression, things were really bad here. But a lot of people were self-sufficient. They were growing their own food. They had farms. Now we've got something like 96% of the population relying on the other 4% for their food. And that's something that people need to really think about, because as that number gets smaller and smaller of the people producing the food versus the people depending on it, then the amount of freedom you have as to what goes into that food is going to become less and less. I mean, they've got things here now called food printers where you basically just put a glop in there and it prints out something that looks like food. I mean, eventually we're not even going to know what's being put into what we're eating at all. I mean, we barely do now. So we need to think about getting more self-sufficient on every possible level we can. And even if you've got a small space, there are answers out there, lots of research that can be done for that. So that's what we're going to try and do. And we just hope everyone else will too, because the more people that do that, the less power this system has to control us with our food.
And reject their rhetoric. Whatever, even if they're talking about a real problem, global hunger, this and that, they're looking for more power from their, quote, solutions. You got to look right at what their proposed solution is. This whole thing is a power dynamic. We've willingly handed over all our political power in the U.S. at the federal level and pretty much everybody at the global level. We've done the same thing with food, and we got to start taking power back at the individual level and various levels in between.
I mean, when's the last time our government passed a law that didn't benefit corporations here in America? I can't think of one, so...
It's been a while, we'll put it that way. Exactly right. So again, I don't think sitting around and waiting for elected representatives to solve this the problem is the right way to approach this. I think, again, this does have to devolve back to individuals and individual responsibility. So again, it is a huge topic. It relates to so many other topics. It relates to the urbanization agenda. It relates to eugenics. It relates to so much. But let's leave it there for now, and hopefully we can have you guys back on in the future to continue talking about your research. I will once again direct people to truthstreammedia.com if they haven't checked it out yet. Excellent work there, coming out on pretty much a daily basis from what I see. So my hat's off to you guys for doing that, and thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thanks very much,
thanks
James.
Thanks so much, James.
We'd love to speak to you anytime.